You're listening to Circle of Hope Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 3800 Marlton Pike. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. or 7 o'clock p.m.
We've been looking at the Psalms to help us get into more than a day of gratitude. It's Thanksgiving week. This was the reason for this season, the pre-Thanksgiving warm-up. We're going to do one more week next Sunday, but I'm just trying to lay it on thick. How can we actually be grateful all the time? And we've been working with the Psalms, and this week we're on Psalm 29. And the Psalms were designed to be a liturgical exercise. They weren't just written always for one person. They got used. And they have been used since they were written, but some of them were even designed to be used like those songs we were just singing. So let's do this one together. Let's read it out loud. I've got the power, I think. Here we go. Your parts are in yellow. And this psalm, believe it or not, it's kind of metal, okay? Like metal, like, yeah, that kind of like, you know, it's like it has some force behind it. So as much as you can at 11:10 now in the morning, give your yellow part some metal. Don't actually scream, that'll be weird. No, just give it your all is what I'm saying, okay? Get into this for a second with me. Ready?
Ascribe to the Lord!
You heavenly beings, ascribe to the Lord glory and strength.
Ascribe to the Lord the glory due his name.
Worship the Lord in the splendor of his holiness.
The voice of the Lord!
Eat turkey and mashed potatoes, and thank God. It's a really good thing. In 1861, in the first year of the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln put out this proclamation. The year is drawing towards its close. Even though Abraham Lincoln was from like Kentucky or whatever, or Illinois, where's he from?
Illinois.
Kentucky?
Illinois.
I think you're right. I think he was born in Kentucky, but then he was a lawyer in Illinois. You gotta get your American mythology right. I don't know it, obviously. And he did his math on a shovel by the firelight. We know that. Mythology, definitely. Anyway, okay, back to, it's 1861. Oh, what I was going to say is, I still want to make him have like a British accent. Old equals British accent or something, I don't know why. This year that's drawing towards its close has been filled with the blessings of fruitful fields and healthful skies. To these bounties, which are so constantly enjoyed that we are prone to forget the source from which they come, others have been added, which are so extraordinary in nature that they cannot fail to penetrate and soften the heart, which is habitually insensible to the ever-watchful providence of Almighty God. Now, this could cynically be chalked up or given up or ascribed to propaganda, because the rest of the proclamation has a lot to do with how the Union is holding together, even though there's a civil war. And, you know, Thanksgiving is designed as, like, this kind of ploy, even. At least that's how Abraham Lincoln took it, which was probably appropriate for the moment. But you could say, that's just political speech. And you could forget about how it's really, it could be taken as being grateful. We could be doing Yahav with Thanksgiving and doing it well. We live awash in the cynicism and the despair that would push us towards that kind of thinking. Forget Abraham Lincoln. It's all propaganda. It's all mythology. He's a warmonger like the rest, even though the war was good. You know, we could have that kind of thinking, or just not care. That's another option. We could not let that kind of penetrate us. But I think Abraham Lincoln, he's right. He's right about how some things are so common, so consistent, like harvest time, that it's just easy to not let it sink in. And we need even a whole national annual celebration to not forget that there's this good stuff happening. Yahav is about that kind of recognition. You know, I like, even going back to the English word ascribe, we write it down, you know. Would you say, Matt, there's evidence of the goodness, at least in our own journals or on the scrap of paper where we wrote it. The exclamation point that we put next to the good news in the paper for those of us that read the paper with a pen or read the paper at all in paper form. I think everyone, though, is actually pretty good at ascribing, like giving it up to something, just not very consciously all the time. We're always ascribing it to something, whatever's happening. And this practice that Abraham Lincoln had got us set going on is like a way to make sure that it keeps conscious. We make a whole tradition out of it. We create a whole mythological story to help it have some like even deeper meaning that goes down to the roots of our country. I think we might have some better roots We as Christians definitely have better roots, but still, I like that it gets deep like that. So what do we ascribe things to, if not to the source of all this goodness, if not to the Almighty God, as Abraham Lincoln said, and I hope he believed? What do we ascribe things to? Because we're always doing it. Chance, the government, the economic market, our place in society, yourself, karma even gets in there. For many of us, the most common ascribing we do, though, I think, is to ourselves, you know, in one way or another. I did this. I get the credit. I worked hard. I should receive the praise. This is my turkey. I spent enough money at Acme to get it for free. In some cases, I think this is completely appropriate to take the credit. You worked hard on, like, for example, like a project at work. You had the idea, you put in the extra hours completing it, and if someone swoops in at like the last minute on your project and tries to take the credit, or just come in at the end and kind of put the icing on top, and they're really good at selling themselves so that the boss notices them, or maybe even your boss passes your project up the chain and takes credit for himself because he's such a good manager. I say he because mostly he's do that. Or maybe at home in your family, like, you clean the whole house while your spouse is out. You mop the floor. You vacuum under the cushions. Who does that? You wash the windows. And then you have to take a shower because you've sweated so much to clean the whole house. And then your spouse comes home and they've just had a horrible day or something like that. And they don't even notice a thing. That is an attack on your personhood. if they don't immediately say, "Oh my gosh, the house is clean," we die inside or blow up or do something. We're so in need of that recognition. We need some ascribing to us. Some of us get this kind of self-satisfied though. Like if we fold one load of laundry. Folded that laundry, and now you're going to come at me with something else? Come on. And that's where we go wrong. If we get into the habit of ascribing things to ourselves, it's kind of easy to fall into this sense of entitlement for praise. Or you could even be wired in such a way that you have to have praise. I'm kind of wired like this. Please, stroke me. I need to be told I'm good all the time. I need people to ascribe things to me, especially the people that love me. The boss who forgot to give you props for the project, he's probably stuck in that himself. He's probably worried about his own career and his own like bottom lines that he's working on for the department. He's got his own stuff going on. He might not even be aware of this pattern of behavior that he has. You know, it just didn't come up, all the work that you did. I just didn't think of it, you know, because he's kind of caught up in this cycle of ascribing it to himself. But others of us are chronic undervaluers of ourselves. We ascribe very little to ourselves, or maybe we ascribe too much of the bad stuff. We can't imagine doing something great because we don't think we're great. You might ascribe all the mistakes and all of the, even the things that you didn't do but you might have been able to prevent. You could ascribe those to yourself. You might think that thing went wrong just because you were involved, like you touched it and you're cursed or something. Everything could be your responsibility, and of course that's no good either. But, you know, everyone has their problems. I don't know, that one feels worse to me. It feels harder to me. I hope you don't feel that way. The good news of this psalm is that God is in control. Not you. Not the randomness of chance. Not the dispassionate universe. Not just the energy you put into something that's coming back to you. Not karma. God is in control. And even over the scary stuff. Like I said, Psalm 29 is pretty metal, right? Twisted oaks, cedars getting laid bare. Just imagine, like, splintering wood, you know? It's dark and defiant. All these powerful forces of nature, these destructive forces are demonstrations of God's glory. Water is the Hebrew symbol for chaos. It's the first thing. God's voice is over the waters. All of the craziness in the world is symbolized in there, in that water. God's voice is over that. God can tear down a tree, an oak, but not even just an oak, a cedar. The biggest trees that anyone had ever imagined in the Middle East. We know that there are some bigger ones here in North America, woot woot. But the cedars of Lebanon were the biggest thing that they could imagine, and God could just rip those down like a twig. I went and saw some cedars in the Belle Plaine State Forest. Anyone been down there to Belle Plaine? Yeah? It's a beautiful place. I just discovered it. And I was imagining the long, this is a cedar tree. You can imagine one. But in Belle Plaine, they just have like more of a canopy, and they have these long trunks. They're white cedar and they're pretty light bark. And they have this long grain of their bark the bark of these long strips, if you can imagine a cedar. I don't know if you've seen one enough to imagine it. But these long strips, and I just imagine those just getting twisted and exploded and splintered at the sound of God's voice. The voice of the Lord shakes the desert, like the desert of Kadesh. Put that in context, we might say, it doesn't just like shake Kansas. It shakes the whole Great Plains. You know, it just shakes everything. The whole desert of Kadesh. That's kind of what they're saying. The voice of the Lord is big. It's in the biggest forces the author can imagine. And in that, those forces, there is God's glory. You know, this part, and in his temple, all cry glory. When everything is just laid bare, what's all that's left is just a glory. You know, that's the sense of it. One biblical scholar said, this psalm can be best rehearsed beneath the black wing of tempest, by the glare of the lightning, or amid that dubious dusk which heralds the war of elements. The verses march to the tune of thunderbolts. God is everywhere conspicuous, and all the earth is hushed by the majesty of his presence. God is everywhere conspicuous. Everywhere God can be seen, heard, felt. Ascribe to the Lord, Yahav, give it up. But there's another big contender, I think, for who we're going to ascribe things to. Another ascribee, let's say. And I think it's explanation. We can ascribe everything in this psalm to what we know about natural forces. And we know a lot now, a lot more than they knew way back when this psalm was written. We could ascribe thunder, the lightning, the cedars falling down, and the earthquake to our own understanding. We could be the opposite of silent. We could just start talking. Well, the cedar fell down because there was enough wind to displace the roots of the tree, and I don't even know enough to sound like I'm faking it. But some people do. Some people know a lot. And when we start talking, I think we start missing the glory of it, and we jump right to our conclusions. Science and theology have kind of been pitted against each other in this disastrous battle since the age of discovery, since we started doing math and understanding how the universe worked. But it's gotten really bad, I think, in the last 200 years. The split is kind of firm. So that the point, I have a friend who, you know, I ask him, so why aren't you a Christian? You know, like, I love you, you love me. We have a lot in common. It seems like, you know, you're like one of the most Christian guys I know as far as like how you spend your life and the hope that you have for transformation. Why aren't you a Christian? He's like, well, look at this. You know, I got, somebody has an explanation for all of this. Like that's his answer for why he wouldn't put his trust in something beyond what he can see or what others can measure. Because there's an explanation. And I'm not putting him down. I think that's a fine answer, and it is an answer that he has and a lot of people have. But science and theology, this explanation, I don't think they're opposed. I know they're not opposed. When it comes down to the intricacies of what we know about so much, I think that if you just have to go a little bit deeper, but there's still glory. There's still like this whisper of, oh my goodness, glory. You know, it's less dumbfounded glory because now we're so dang smart, and we really are. It's amazing what we've been able to understand about this phenomena that gets described in the psalm. The awe just has to be transferred. The question marks get deeper and deeper. But, you know, most astrophysicists and, not most, but a lot of astrophysicists and, like, what's it like way down inside an atom? What's that called? Particle physicists. There we go. Like, astrophysicists and particle physicists, they've got a lot of mystery and glory. Even if they don't ascribe it to God, they're getting somewhere where they're hushed and they're whispering.
They do have faith.
They have a faith in, yeah, they have faith in at least what they're learning together. I think it takes an outsider sometimes to get us down to those question marks where we need to be. The outsider perspective helps us kind of see ourselves, and if we're open to them, they can help. So I got this guy. Hey, where is he?
Ooh. There he is.
Jose Marti. All right? Only the Spanish major will know who he is. I'm a Spanish major. He's this Cuban poet and essayist in the turn of the 19th century, 18th century. No, 20th century. He died right before the 1900. No, right before the 1800s were over. He died in 1895. However that works. This is what he says. He came and he visited the United States, and he had grown up in Cuba and in different parts of the Caribbean. And he says, anyone who enters a North American factory where the machines go round and roar and the whispers of the steam murmur and men pass with mountains of things on their backs and the elevator rises, to them, the wondrous is natural because they were born into it. They throw themselves at everything because they have seen everything. Nothing astounds them because they live in the middle of astoundment. He came in like the 1890s to the United States. 130 years later, and this lack of surprise, I think, is something we deal with all the time as Americans. Maybe other countries have caught up with us too. This lack of surprise, this lack of astoundment, unless we decide to do some ascribing, is going to be a big part of our lives. Marti was amazed at the industry of the North Americans. I think that he meant nothing astounds them as like a compliment. I think he's saying something, wow, these people are really something. But I'm looking at it as a bit of a warning too. Wonder, surprise, astoundment. I don't want to live without them. And it seems possible, for maybe the first time in history, that's an option. That we could live without wonder. The centuries before the first century, people that are writing the Psalms, that's not an option. But we have a more complicated life, and part of our complication is all the knowledge that we have. So here's more of another modern day example of something that I think is astounding, even though it's heavily scientific. This is an extracorporeal membrane oxygenation machine, an ECMO machine. I worked as a chaplain, and they would use this in the cardiac intensive care unit to be a heart and lungs for a person, for a human being. They would pump all the blood out of them because their heart wasn't working. Pump it all out. They would oxygenate it through an artificial lung, which is this extracorporeal, outside the body, membrane. And that's what happens in your lungs, is that oxygen passes through a membrane in your alveoli. You know, they create this simulated alveoli so that the oxygen could get into your blood. And then they pump it back all around your whole body because they turned your heart off. Most of these people are waiting for a heart transplant, and some of them, this helps them make it to the transplant date, and then they survive for at least like another 10 years. I know someone who had an ECMO machine, got a new heart, and is still alive. You know? Glory. Glory. It's incredible. This is ridiculous. This shouldn't exist, you know? I ascribe to God the glory for this. I also ascribe to the scientists that discovered this capacity and the like crazy amount of communal activity that needed to do this. It wasn't one person that invented the ECMO. It's probably thousands of people. And they worked together and they figured out how to do this to save lives. And it is really amazing. And so both for the scientists and for God, I say glory, Yahab, give it up. And I think there's a place for us in the psalm that we can fit right in there with the scientists, right at the beginning. You might have missed it because we were all excited. Ascribe to the Lord, you heavenly beings. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. You heavenly beings, what are they talking about? The King James Version translated, ye mighty ones. I'm putting the scientists right there. These kind of, because what some biblical scholars think is actually going on here is this is like an appropriated song that they like stole from a neighboring country. This sounds a lot like what all the other cultures are saying about their storm god. You know, the flood that's going to come and change everything. There's this god that's in control of it, and you're going to get it if you're bad or good or whatever you did right or wrong. It's this kind of real retributive kind of theology. And so they're saying maybe some biblical scholars are saying, well, maybe even that storm god is like a god, you know, but Yahweh is on top of it. It's this kind of like supersession, like, no, he's even above the mighty ones. He's even above the heavenly beings that mess everything up. Doctor, immense ECMO, I'm putting that kind of right with the storm god of ancient Near East theology. You know, like, no, you are seriously powerful. Like, you are, no, science, you are seriously doing some amazing stuff. You might even be a god, lowercase g. And certainly a lot of people treat you like a god, capital G, my friend who's finding meaning in the explanation of everything. It works for some people, you know? They have hope and faith in that capacity. And I don't blame them, because look at the ECMO machine, you know? But I think we can go with Psalm 29. Maybe that's an adequate explanation. But you know, biblical scholars are just kind of making it up, right? They don't have a whole lot of evidence they're going on. They're just like making comparisons because they have a few things to go off of because it was such a long time ago. But let's say they're right. And even the scientists then need to give glory to God to the glory due his name. Yes, you're powerful. We acknowledge the amazing things that you can do. Like, but God's voice is even in what you do. Everything has become so complex that we can't rightly say as individuals that we know anything. You know, what do you actually know? You know, do you know the proof for the sun going around the earth? You know, have you done the math? Some of you have. I think some of you have actually done the math. But most of what we're doing is trusting. We're trusting in these kind of lower authorities, the idea of science, the books that we've read, or even the things that we've just been told and kind of assume. I think that's okay. I think it's a fine way to be in this complex world. Yes, I trust in that, but there's something even above that. And I'm calling even the things that I trust in that aren't God to also join me in ascribing. Give it up, everybody together. I don't understand how it all works. Even though we can explain some of these things that are in the psalm, there's tons of stuff that we can't explain about ourselves and about the world that we know. So let's ascribe together to the Lord. Let's give it up. Join me, science, in giving it up to God. At your foundations, there is still a mystery. I'm talking to science now. There is still a mystery. They rise to the top for me because I understand so little of it. My understanding is stripped bare. I stand in awe of what you have done, and I can only say glory in my whisper. And this ascribing, it gives me strength, like it says here at the end. It gives me a peace that I have a place in the world, that God is watching over it all somehow, and I'm receiving the blessing that he has for me by giving him the glory due his name.
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.